Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, January 26th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford, featuring voice-activated Sync App Link. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice, so you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Check it out in the 2012 Ford Fiesta and at Ford.com/technology. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us today from across the wide Sargasso Sea and the rest of the Atlantic Ocean, Mr. Patrick Beja.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good to have you, Patrick. Thanks for joining us again, man.
Very nice to be here once again.
Always a pleasure to have you on the show. Get a French perspective, an international perspective, and we have an international story of some consequence to lead off the show. ACTA. Those who have been watching my shows may remember me talking about this back in 2009 on Buzz Out Loud. I've talked about it on TWiT. I haven't covered it as much in the past years since the secrecy ended. So I'll give you a little brief on ACTA. It stands for the Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement. And the big controversy about it for a long time was that it was being negotiated in secret by the United States government with its partners and would have required the ability to cut off people's internet connections, had severe penalties for copyright infringement built into it. Since then, through intense pressure from both legitimate sources like the European Parliament as well as activist groups, the text was made available in December 2010, and it has now been making the rounds for votes. Last year, Australia, New Zealand, the United States, Japan all signed the agreement, and today the UK and 21 other European Union member states signed ACTA in Tokyo. Now, five EU countries declined to sign. Germany, the Netherlands, Estonia, Cyprus, and Slovakia would not sign on to ACTA. These countries signing ACTA does not, in fact, make it a law yet. It still has to be passed by the European Parliament. They'll vote on that in a plenary session sometime between June 11th and June 14th. But here's what's causing the disturbance. In fact, when I say I'm not talking about people just being sort of angry, there are thousands of people in the streets in Poland opposing the country's signing of the treaty. ACTA demands that governments make it unlawful to market devices that circumvent copyright, such as devices that copy encrypted DVDs without authorization. So here in the United States, we have the Digital Millennium Copyright Act already. This essentially says every member state that signs on to ACTA has to have their own version of the DMCA. It calls on participating nations to maintain extensive seizure and forfeiture laws when it comes to counterfeited goods that are trademarked or copyrighted. This applies more to actual goods and services. Could apply to things like seeds and drugs. Some people say it could prevent generic drugs from being distributed. That's different than the whole digital thing. Countries must carry out a legal system where victims of intellectual property theft may be awarded an undefined amount of monetary damages. So it sets statutory limits, which we actually have here in the United States. Now, the big controversy is around ISP safe harbor. It does have a provision for safe harbor for ISPs conditioned on the ISP, quote, adopting and reasonably implementing a policy to address the unauthorized storage or transmissions of materials protected by copyright. Our system here in the United States fits that definition as it exists, which is you're not liable for the content being transmitted over your network or your service as long as you actively remove it when asked. But countries would have leeway in how they implement this, and a lot of folks opposed to ACTA feel like this could be used to silence free speech in countries that don't have strong free speech laws. And finally, it allows rights holders to expeditiously obtain from ISPs, providers, information on the identity of the relevant subscriber. And so a lot of people think that this is going too far, saying that you make it too easy to identify people and what they're saying. And that could also be used for nefarious purposes. The head of the European Commission has claimed that the treaty does not change any existing European law, and therefore it should be passed. Opponents say that even if it doesn't change existing European law, it could be interpreted in ways that current law can't be interpreted, and it would encourage other countries to pass laws that they don't currently have and wouldn't be necessary. The treaty will have to be discussed by the EU International Trade Committee at the end of February. In early March, it'll be voted on. And in April or May, if it passes through that committee, it will pass on to the European Parliament, where, as I mentioned, they'll do a plenary vote between June 11th and June 14th. So there's the lay of the land, quite a lay of the land. Patrick, this is hitting you right where you live, right? You live in France. You have a three strikes law, which this doesn't require, by the way, but you have one of the stricter laws on copyright infringement. Are you worried about ACTA, or do you feel like it doesn't really change anything?
Well, personally, I'm starting to get worried now, but I'm even more worried that I'm getting worried too late, because it seems that this thing is almost already in the bag. You're saying that the European Parliament has to sign it, has to vote on it, and I trust you because you're a fine reporter, but here the feeling was now they're signing the treaty, and the treaty is binding, and I don't know how you call it in English, but the rapporteur to the European Parliament on the on that mission has resigned from his post because he thought that his name is Kader Arif, and he was thinking this is a masquerade. It's been delayed without explanation. It's being passed in a very hush-hush manner. The civil society has not been associated with any of this, and the European Parliament has spoken against it many times, and still government are signing the treaty. So there is a great deal of concern on the people who are sort of aware of these things. But the problem is, unlike what you guys had for SOPA, which ultimately led to some reaction from the governments, here it feels like we don't have the kind of support from the business world. We don't have companies that would ever go on a blackout or anything like that to express their opposition to something of that nature. If anything, we have companies that probably need the support or think they need the support of these kinds of laws to protect their IPs. So it's a concerning thing, but we're not exactly sure how we can remedy it.
Well, La Quadrature is leading the charge. They have some videos out opposing ACTA, explaining what their problems are with ACTA, and they encourage anyone who is opposed to ACTA in Europe to write their member of European Parliament, their MEP, because if the European Parliament doesn't pass it, then it's questionable. At the very least, it's questionable whether it becomes law. And from what I've read, it doesn't become law in Europe. However, there may be other ways, that, like you're saying, Patrick, that this could squeak in. Some people in the chat room are claiming that if an individual parliament within Europe passed it, it would become law in that country. I'm not sure if that's true or not. So, like you say, it's very confusing, but at least...
Well, it might become... I'm thinking it might become law in one of the countries, and then the European Parliament or, you know, some European oversight structure could look at it and say, well, actually, according to the European law, this is illegal, so you can't do it. But it's still not 100%. And La Quadrature, which you're mentioning, is a very active organization and probably the best chance we have for raising awareness to these kinds of things. But the problem is we're not seeing the penetration in the consumer press or even, to be honest, the specialized press for this. It only started 2 or 3 days ago. I saw tweets flying around and things like that, but it was very recent and it was already too late.
Well, it seems like this ACTA doesn't go after like search engines like SOPA did, which got Google and Microsoft, a lot of these companies, pretty upset because they had to curate their search results differently, and that could lead to a censorship issue. With the ISP, not recommendation, but the regulation effectively adopting a reasonable policy, that is, about unauthorized storage of copyrighted materials. That's something we already have here. So, like, it doesn't seem like that's inherently evil, that ISPs have to have a policy to do something, because as ACTA is written, it looks like it's the low bar. This is the standard, and each country can decide to do a lot stricter things. That's fine with ACTA. So I'm wondering if that's why it's not getting the same kind of gut reaction, because it's not the major players on the internet getting hit. These are like almost like oligopoly of ISPs that are stuck in this industry.
Well, I think one of the reasons several people are upset is it was negotiated in secret, mm-hmm. pushed through by the United States, an attempt to essentially make the rest of the world, or at least large portions of the world, play by the United States rules without going through the public process of lawmaking. It's a trade agreement, but it's not a trade agreement. This is domestic law being written, but because they pushed it through as a trade agreement and there's some trade aspects to it, they're able to do an end run around the normal process of lawmaking and possibly shove it through. And I think a lot of people are very upset about that.
It seems at the very least there's a legitimate concern that all of this is again being done to protect something that maybe might not need that much cutting corners and enacting treaties that will, you know, in effect become local laws just for IP. And I know that's, you know, the argument you've had about SOPA. We need to protect them, maybe not with these kinds of methods.
All right, let's move on to something that Patrick doesn't care a whit about, AT&T, domestic carrier here, posting a loss of $6.7 billion in the fourth quarter due to two main reasons. One, they changed the way they account for their pension benefits. That's a purely financial reason. But that breakup fee with T-Mobile, because the FCC did not approve the merger and AT&T had bet big to the tune of around $4 billion worth of penalties, both cash and spectrum, they have to pay that out to T-Mobile now. So that comes out of their fourth quarter results. Revenue for AT&T rose 3.6% to $32.5 billion. So once you get rid of these accounting changes and the penalty to T-Mobile, it's not such a bad quarter. AT&T CEO Randall Stephenson took the opportunity on the earnings call to take a smack at the FCC, which he's not too happy with since they didn't approve the T-Mobile deal. He said, "We don't know what spectrum caps are going to apply with one transaction to the next. The first issue is not identifying available spectrum, but what the rules are." And what he's talking about is there used to be something called a spectrum cap. So actually, when Bell South and AT&T merged, they were subject to a spectrum cap rule, I think. It might have been a screen then, too. But the spectrum cap said one entity can't own more than this amount of spectrum. And it was fairly straightforward. Now there's using something called a spectrum screen, which is much more complicated. If a company owns around a third of the spectrum to be used for a particular service in a significant market, that activates the spectrum screen, and then the FCC will evaluate on a case-by-case basis whether that spectrum acquisition would be allowed. That's a lot more difficult to predict, and that's what Randall Stephenson is complaining about. So it just brings up this problem that every company is worried that there's not enough spectrum out there.
He's just being a sore loser. I mean, look, they couldn't get the spectrum from T-Mobile because they wanted to kill a competitor as they were doing this. You should just shut up and buy Dish already, get your spectrum, and move on.
Just a case of sour grapes, AT&T. Buck up, Stephenson. You still had a good quarter-ish.
There's spectrum to go out there and buy. Go
it's out there.
Buy it with
Verizon
the money you don't out. Have because you had to give it to T-Mobile.
Well, they made a bet. Right? And they lost.
Well, I mean, AT&T accounts for 20% of all the iPhones that were sold. That's pretty, I don't know, impressive.
Yeah, but they get the other iPhones, right? They get the 99-cent iPhone 3GS, and they have the old iPhones.
So sure,
versus
sure.
The other guys who have, well, less than that. So, I mean, their iPhone number was the combined number. It wasn't the 4S.
I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, that's true. Some of those don't really bring in a whole lot of dough.
I thought it was interesting, too, that revenue per user has been going down with smartphones. And we saw this in the Verizon earnings earlier this week as well. But AT&T is realizing gains from connected devices like picture frames and dog collars.
They got in early on the wearable tech stuff, which is kind of strange, with 3G connections to there. And I remember seeing them, but it was showing up in Randomizer as items. Very odd, like sports equipment.
Wait,
so you can track metrics.
Are people really using picture frames via 3G on a regular basis?
Well, apparently enough to cause AT&T to make more money off that than they're making off phones per item anyway.
Well, that's
probably the thing that, you know, they sell when you get into the store and they're like, "Oh, you want a phone? You know what you can also get? That picture frame. It's awesome. It updates with the pictures from your phone, like with this service."
I don't know if those are in the phone store so much as in your other retail stores where you don't even realize AT&T is involved. It's like, hey, this picture frame comes with a connection. That's awesome.
What about all the people who are able to eat? Well, at least on my carrier plan, which is with Verizon, I can't completely get rid of a texting plan, but I now pay for the most minimum texting plan possible because I don't text that much, because all my texting has sort of been routed over to data equivalents like Facebook Messenger and apps like that. Now, I pay for unlimited. I pay a pretty penny for it, but all of that just goes into my unlimited data. So maybe that has something to do with people's monthly bills being lower because they can circumvent them.
Well, that's true. There may be other ways that people are going around, but it's not even that people are paying less. It's that AT&T is making less. Even if you have a big expensive plan, they're just not making as much money off of those smartphone plans because of the high cost of subsidization, the high cost of data provision, et cetera, where if they're selling, I mean, the Kindle kind of pioneered this in a way where it came with a built-in data connection. AT&T provides that connection. Now, Sprint used to provide that connection, and both of them make money from Amazon. You don't pay anything, and that's the ideal way, right? So I see this as a piece of hope to say, look, you don't have to continue to screw us as phone customers. You can actually make money in other ways, and screw us in ways we don't even realize are happening, which we'll be perfectly happy to do with our connected dog collars, apparently.
I think you're being an optimist right now.
I'm always an optimist.
You think that they're just going to figure out to either cut some of the subsidies or the monthly prices will go up. Like AT&T just did this a couple of weeks ago where they changed all the data plans too.
Well, I don't hope. It's happening. They're looking at their smartphones and going, crap, we're not making very much per person on this, but we're going to keep selling these iPhones. We can't help it. We're on the crack. We can't kick the habit. So let's tout the fact that we're making money in these other areas. At least we're not losing money on iPhones. We're bringing in customers. It's not just optimism. It's actually what they're saying, in at least my interpretation of what they're saying in this earnings call. Another earnings call, which actually applies more to you, Patrick, in your region of the world. Nokia announced that they sold 1 million Windows phones, actually. They actually sold 19.6 million smartphones in the last quarter. However, the bad news is Symbian is declining faster than expected. In fact, declining so unpredictably that they're not even making a financial forecast for 2012 yet because they just don't know how bad the Symbian decline is going to get. For the year 2011, the number of smart device sales decreased 31%, and they had an operating loss of 954 million euros. That's about $1.2 billion. They expected to have a loss. That's not a huge shock. They've prepared people saying, you know, it's not going to be till the end of 2012 we start to turn this boat around or put out the fire on the platform or whatever the metaphor was that Elon used. The good news is they generated an operating profit of 208 million euros from their mobile division. It was actually the location and commerce group that dropped most of the money. And interesting little note, they received a platform support payment from Microsoft for $250 million. So if they get that every quarter, that's $1 billion by the end of the year.
I wonder if it's an ongoing deal, actually, now you say that in jest. But, okay, so Nokia trying to turn everything around. And they're not doing so bad, actually. Selling 1 million Windows phones, considering they had none last year, is actually pretty impressive. I mean, they partnered up with Microsoft. They did something gutsy. And we're going to see if it pans out over the time. But, like, I think they've – at least they tried something different. That's, like, I keep – comparing Nokia to RIM, because RIM's going, stay the course. And Nokia's like, figure something else out.
Burn the right platform. Now.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, it's interesting Symbian has... Go ahead, Patrick.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't think a million phones is a huge amount, given that it was like the Windows phone that they came out with, you know, the Lumia 800, I believe. But yeah, it's definitely, it seems like it's starting to pay off, or at least they're on the right track. And when Windows 8 comes out and the interface is uniform on all the Microsoft devices, it seems like Nokia is set to be the Windows phone manufacturer. So in the long run, I definitely believe they did the right choice and it's going to pay off within a year or two.
It's also interesting to me that even though Symbian declined and quicker than Nokia would have hoped, there are a couple markets where it important. South America, and I believe at least some parts of Asia, Southeast Asia, emerging markets. So two places where Android hasn't taken over, I guess, as far as a low-cost smartphone. But how long will that sort of number hold? I mean, it's nice for them that they figure, well, you know, this is still an area where we could see some growth or at least hold steady. But will it be the same case next year? Because Windows Phone, I don't know, is the right operating system to come into place, even if Symbian doesn't stay. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Nokia knows that. In fact, they don't expect Windows Phone to come into place. They expected Symbian to hold the gap. So your question is very pertinent.
You know what's going to happen? Android is going to get cheap Android phones are going to get in the market there. And you know who makes money off of Android phones?
Microsoft.
So they win on every, you know, level.
Yeah. Nokia just bought another company that makes basically a feature phone OS. I don't know whether to displace Symbian. We didn't know. They didn't announce what exactly they were going to do with that. On top of that, Microsoft's been working on Windows Phone Tango, which requires less of a hardware spec. It needs like a 256 megabytes of RAM. So if Nokia bothers to use that Tango thing for emerging markets, it could work because it would be a lower-cost phone. It wouldn't cost them so much money to build each device, and that could help them kind of bridge this gap between Symbian and this other operating system that they still own.
Yeah, they've got a couple other options there. We'll see what strategy they have. It sounds like they're trying to figure that out, too. That's why they're not giving any financial guidance for 2012.
Remember how we were talking about Nokia, what is it, like a year ago? They were becoming sort of ridiculous. And now it's not so funny anymore. So well done.
At least they're trying something that seems to, at the very worst, not be failing and possibly succeeding. And back to your point, Ayaz, that's more than you can say for RIM right now. Yeah. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Ford, featuring available voice-activated Sync AppLink. Sync AppLink enables you to control select apps from your smartphone with just your voice. You keep your hands on the wheel, your eyes on the road, but you can say, Pandora, play my The Like channel, and it'll play your channel. You can even create channels on the fly, all to keep your entertainment going, keep yourself awake. Sometimes it's important to have that, you know, nice, loud, pumping rock music so you don't fall asleep at the wheel. But you don't have to be fiddling around with the phone. You just talk to it. Sync AppLink actually has more than just Pandora. There's OpenBeak for reading your Twitter feed. There's Stitcher for playing podcasts. In fact, there's new apps happening all the time. They've got an API. They're working with all kinds of developers to continue to expand the number of apps that work with AppLink. So check it out. Voice-activated Sync AppLink available in the 2012 Ford Fiesta. If you want to see it in situ in a car, go test drive one of those. Or you can learn more about Ford Tech, including AppLink, at Ford.com/technology. We thank Ford for their support of Tech News Today. Onward and inward to HTC. They've got a new strategy that they're ripping off, well, partly from Nokia, but also from Apple, saying, you know what we did last year? We put out too many darn phones. This is Chief Phil Roberson of HTC UK talking to Mobile Magazine, saying that HTC this year will try to give customers something special and deliver a few hero products. He says, we have to get back to focusing on what made us great, amazing hardware and great customer experience. We ended 2011 with far more products than we started out with. We tried to do too much. And it's true. If you look back, they put out a franchise phone and then 3 months later put out another one. They never let any of them have enough momentum to keep going. Compare that to the iPhone, which comes out with one new model every year.
I mean, Motorola is trying to do the same thing. They're cutting back, and RIM is cutting back. Apple's obviously had the one or two models of iPhones. I mean, it's a good idea for HTC to be doing this because then they can spend marketing money on a particular device instead of going, which phone do they make? I mean, we were talking about this a couple episodes ago. The last, I guess, hero phone and the last thing that was, I guess, prevalent in people's minds, probably like the HTC Evo 3D, or the Evo was the first super hot phone they had. I think it's a good move if you actually are willing to step back, refocus, and figure out, look, we need to make a product that people want and not worry about diversifying so much.
And also, it's not just customer confusion, which, of course, there's a lot of. None of us could just sit here and even name all the HTC models off the top of our heads because there's just too many of them.
And they're silly names.
And they have stupid names, too. Titans. But also, let's say I'm, you know, Android curious, and Tom's sitting next to me with one of the lowest you know, and HTC phones out there. And I look, and my first reaction is, oh, HTC is like the cheapo brand. I don't want that. It's hard for people to get excited about a product when they're looking at just one version of many choices that they have.
Mm-hmm. I think what I like seeing out of this decision, this kind of move, especially with HTC, because they have so many devices, is at least on the Android side, you know, you've got the fragmentation kind of thing lingering always over all of these different devices. Hopefully this allows them to focus on the fewer devices that they actually have as far as support is concerned. You know, this means that their attention is split less over all of these just many devices for bringing them up to date with new versions and all that. And hopefully they can kind of focus a little bit more on the fewer devices that they have. So current customers are happy too.
Do you have my screen up?
I do.
By the way, Kiju just put this link in the chat room. It's from SBNation.com, so I assume it's The Verge. I don't want to be in there. On the right side are all the HTC phones from Q1 2010 through the end of 2011. On the left side are the two iPhones from that same period.
The audio listeners, there's what, like 11, 12, 15? Even more.
Some of the phones are overlapped. You can't even
see the sauce on the cha-cha back there.
It's also hard to compare any line of phones to the iPhone line of phones because Apple obviously does things so uniquely, and they've got, you know, this high ticket item that they put all of the, you know, all of their eggs go into these, you know, these single phone baskets. I love using that metaphor, egg baskets. But yeah, it's even if HTC has four awesome phones in 2012. Well, I will remember them. I will think that, you know, if they're the phones that they're most proud of, then there'll be name recognition, brand recognition. I think it's a really good idea. And they don't have to go the iPhone model, because not every company is ever going to be successful going that route. But just diversifying isn't always the right idea, especially in really crowded market.
You know what the weird thing is, you know, like you were saying, Sarah, about marketing, they don't have a brand like Droid. I mean, Motorola basically used that over and over again. But like the Droid phone, then the Droid Max, and the Droid X, and the Droid whatever, right? These were...
There's too many Droids, but at least it's one brand.
But you know the name, and that's kind of an oddball thing.
The brand should be HTC, shouldn't it?
Well, no, I mean, HTC's, they sell this phone. They sell the
HTC
Titan
phone.
Everything is Titan.
Yeah, I know.
Not just Apple phones. So.
It's definitely, I mean, it's very easy to compare them with the iPhone and say, look, they only have one, and it works, and, you know, yes, sure. But what he's saying actually makes sense on its own, you know? He looked at what happened, and he's just being logical and having common sense. So I don't even think it has that much to do with Apple. It's just almost a coincidence.
Yeah.
Apple is also doing the thing that makes the most sense for them.
They also say they're not going to focus on tablets, by the way. So I saw a few people in the chat room, or at least one person saying, like, they need to stop making crappy tablets and make good phones.
And they didn't say they were leaving the tablet.
That's pretty much what Roberson is saying, is we're going to stop making crappy tablets and we're going to focus on making good phones. You're right. He didn't say they would never make another tablet.
They said they were going to kind of pull back from there. So you're not going to be seeing flyers and jet streams.
He said dial back their presence in the tablet market. Mm-hmm. But that is essentially saying we're going to stop making crappy tablets and start focusing on making good phones.
Are they the ones who made the flyer, like the $700 one with the stylus?
Oh, that's the that's the Jetstream.
That's the HTC, though, right? Yes,
that's HTC.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that hardware is great hardware, but they couldn't figure out how to make it cheaper, which is what you need for an Android tablet.
And it's a good thing that they're not going to get out of the tablet business, because right now is the wave of Android tablets. According to Strategy Analytics, they report that 10.5 million Android-based tablets shipped in the fourth quarter. Android now accounts for 39.1% of the tablet market. So that long-expected decline in iPad percentage of the market has finally affected. iPad shipped 15.4 million to the 10.5 million Androids. No slouch there. And the iPad still holds 57.6% of the market. Oddly, Microsoft nabbed the third spot with 1.5% of the market, assuming that's just Windows running on
those 400,000
tablets. No, there's
an industry.
I know people who go and they're like, no, I'm a Microsoft fan and I'm going to go buy a tablet.
But that's the one place where those slate PCs actually took off, was in the medical industry and in like warehousing, because those things were able to handle that kind of input.
According to Strategy Analytics, 26.8 million tablets hit store shelves last quarter, 66.9 million shipped worldwide in all of 2011. Versus 2010, when only 18.6 million. So tablets themselves are just skyrocketing. By the way, the iPad numbers are iPads sold. The Android, as I mentioned, are shipped. So there's a slight apples and oranges comparison going on there. But this this counts Kindle Fires, too.
Yeah. So that's what really irks me about. I mean, I'm not an Apple fanboy. I'm an Apple fan, but not a fanboy. There's a difference.
And you are a male.
Yes.
Right. That's you're not true.
I'm
man,
an Apple,
not a boy.
Apple fan male. No,
you're a fan man.
Something else. All right. So, two things. First of all, I'm sorry. It's very funny. First of all, shipped versus sold. Honestly, there's no way of actually comparing those two numbers and being accurate.
No way.
That's the first issue. And second, including Kindle Fires, can Kindle Fires really be counted as Android? Yes, they do run Android. I guess the apps from Android do run on the Kindle Fire, so that's somewhat, I guess at the very least they should say, you know, 39.1% of the tablet market to Android with that many Kindle Fires. It doesn't seem like a very fair way.
It's okay, a tablet-shaped device running Android. How do you not count it? You count it as an e-reader? Then it's not fair to the e-readers.
I guess Patrick, the point you're making is Amazon worked really hard to set itself apart from any other Android experience that you could buy. So all of these Kindle Fire numbers, which are extremely healthy over the holiday season, being dumped into the overall Android numbers almost seems like, well, is it the Android experience that people are moving away from iPad for? Not necessarily. Some people see no Android at all, or at least not the pure Android experience as we know it.
Yeah, Apple did say that they didn't think Kindle Fire took any of their market away for the iPads. And it certainly doesn't look like, you know, the iPads are not declining in sales by any stretch. It's just that there are a lot of Android tablets being sold out there. Now, as Strategy Analytics points out, it wasn't just Kindle Fires. There were, you know, Samsung tablets, HTC tablets, lots of other Android-based tablets out there being sold, the Motorola Zoom, et cetera.
Just because an Android tablet is skinned doesn't mean it's not running Android.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. It's running those applications. That's the big deal. I mean, and it's that kind of... I think at the end of the day, it's always Google's underneath it, right? And that's what's really important here. Amazon's is a really interesting case because the way they've closed off things, because HTC has a skin on their stuff. Samsung's got a skin on theirs. So who's really getting a pure Android experience anyway on a tablet?
Right.
Maybe Cyborg?
And that's kind of the promise of Android as an open platform, is that you can have it at its base, which a lot of people prefer, or you as a manufacturer can put an overlay on it and make it look nothing like the base. It's still running on Android.
It's like Android denominations, okay?
Yeah.
It's like
right.
One big,
that's true,
big overarching church. And
there's no doubt that the Kindle Fire compared to something like the iPad, it may be not playing on exactly the same scale, but they're both tablets. They're just tablets that are maybe focused on different things.
They are tablets, but you can't deny that when you present the numbers like this, it's sort of making Android, you know, it's making a point. And I don't think that the point they're trying to make is entirely fair. That being said, I'm very happy that there are lots of Android tablets, and I think competition is very healthy, and we should get more of them. So,
yeah, I do too. I think the more Android tablets are out there, the more people will be... I froze on my side. I wasn't sure if I was frozen on your side too. What I was saying is competition is healthy. The more Android tablets there are, the more there'll be developers. Do you still hear me?
Yes. We still hear you.
Yeah, I thought you were just doing
one of these things. Or you're just not owning your lips while you talk.
I'm still crushed. the more developers will be building apps for all platforms. And if there's a successful Android app, then on the iPad side, a developer's, even if it's not the same company, they're going to say, well, you know, I want to make something like this too. So everybody wins, really, as long as people are interested in tablets. I think that's the real story here, is that people want tablets.
It's like elementary school soccer. Everybody wins. let's finish up with Symantec. This story actually broke yesterday. We didn't cover it, but it has developed more and more. Symantec has announced that users running Norton Antivirus, Corporate Edition, Norton Internet Security, Norton SystemWorks, Symantec Endpoint Protection 11, or Symantec Antivirus 10.2 need to apply the latest maintenance patches immediately. They confirmed that the hacker group Anonymous stole source code from the 2006 versions of several Norton security products and the PC Anywhere remote access tool, and that this is posing a danger. We've reported on this possible theft earlier, and Symantec said, they didn't get anything worth having. Well, after further research and further review, Symantec has determined, actually, they got something that you should be afraid of. And they're actually recommending that most people don't run PC Anywhere. If you do have PC Anywhere deployed in the enterprise, Symantec suggests using it only for business-critical purposes that you can't get by without, as the software is at increased risk. They issued a patch for PC Anywhere on Monday, and they say they will continue to issue patches until a new version of PC Anywhere that addresses all current known vulnerabilities is released. But essentially, kind of a strong move for a company to say, you need to stop using our security software. You never hear a security company say that.
I think when this was first reported, when Symantec lost it, they're like, oh, this will be bad because our competitors can look at it. And that's about it.
Yeah.
But it just turns out PC Anywhere, which is, I think that's more of an enterprise thing anyway. So it's usually, it's much more educated parties running the software. So it's not necessarily, you're hoping. You're right. I didn't think of it that way. But at least it's not like a desktop piece of anti-malware. This is something that IT professionals are taking care of.
All right, let's move on.
Go ahead,
Patrick. Yeah.
What can they do, though? Because when you have a vulnerability, you can patch it somehow, and that's it. Now, if they have the source code, do they have to change the entire, way the program is written to make it safe again? I'm not technical enough to know, but if they're recommended people don't use it, what do they need to do?
I don't believe so. I think what the source code gives you is the ability to find out what's going on in the program and look for vulnerabilities in an easier way. Think of open source products. That source code is available for everyone under the sun to look at. The theory is, because everyone can look at it, everyone finds the same vulnerabilities and they can be patched before the bad guys can take advantage of them. In closed source programs like Norton, the theory is, because they can't look at the source, they won't find the vulnerabilities as fast as we, the folks who run the company, can, and so we can stay ahead of them. In this case, what's happened is making that source code available has led to a few vulnerabilities being found that the company didn't know were there, and now they have to go play catch up. This is almost an argument for open source, is what this is to me.
Well, basically, they forced open sourced their program, kind of. So within 6 months, it will be the safest antivirus program on the planet.
Although the patches aren't open sourced, so those patches won't be part of the source code that was stolen, and they go back to being proprietary at that point. And yes, programmers, we know that what we just said was a gross oversimplification. But if you can explain it with more clarity in normal language, send us an email, please. I'm not being snide here. TNT@twit.tv, because it's a complicated issue to wrap your head around, I know. Let's move on to the news fuse. Things aren't looking good for Nintendo. The company announced a loss of over $600 million for the first three quarters of 2011 and could have its first annual loss in over 30 years, because the 2011 fiscal year for them is not over yet. For the fiscal year, Nintendo expects to lose as much as $838 million.
We got bad numbers for Nintendo, AT&T, Nokia, but don't guys, because Motorola sucks too. Yeah, the soon-to-be-owned, Google-owned Motorola recorded a net loss of $80 million compared to a net income of $80 million in last year's fourth quarter. So, wow, that's a 180. The biggest drag on profits was those pesky phones. Motorola's mobile division recorded an operating loss of $285 million for the full year and an operating loss of $70 million in the fourth quarter alone.
They're making money on set-top boxes. Good for them. Valve introduced a closed beta version of a Steam app for iOS and Android. The app gives users access to the Steam Store and Steam Chat. To request an invite, you have to download the app first. And if you were wondering if you could play games with the app, no.
Zynga Poker has a new friend. The first new game in the Zynga Casino franchise is here. Bingo. Being released on Thursday in beta to a small group and will gradually be rolled out to millions of folks on Facebook over the next few weeks. Mashable's Kate Freeman says the game is beautiful, like a real bingo parlor.
Beautiful.
Players can earn coins, cards, and keys to move up levels and unlock rooms within the game and play in real time and chat with their friends.
Zynga Binga? That's strange.
I'm scared. I'm frightened. Along with its earnings report yesterday, Netflix CEO Reed Hastings says he believes that Amazon is going to introduce a standalone version of its streaming video service, and it will be at a lower price than Netflix's. Yikes. Is he worried about this? No. Actually says he's not really worried about competition because Netflix has the larger library of content than anybody else. Hastings also told investors that the company will not be offering video game rentals. Nope, no, they're off that train. Video game rentals were to be part of the ill-fated Quickster service, you all might remember, that never actually went anywhere because the name was so bad and also because people didn't like them splitting up the company.
Gather around, youngins. Starting today, 13-year-olds and older can sign up for Google+. Those under 18 will have a modified Plus experience as they will receive extra warnings for public posts, and Hangouts will have a feature that will turn off video and audio if someone outside the user's circle joins. Google has also added in Google Earth to Google Plus, so you can share your trips virtually.
A new bill introduced in the state of Hawaii would require internet service providers to keep a log of every website its users visit, along with the customer's name and address, for 2 years. The bill, HB 2288, was introduced last Friday. A virtually identical bill is also making its way through the Hawaiian Senate. As expected, there's a backlash to these bills on privacy concerns, and so I have made it my commitment to you that I will travel to Hawaii Saturday morning to investigate just what's going on with these bills.
And you will stay for a whole week.
I will stay until I find out what's going on.
You give them what for, Tom?
I will.
You know, maybe you'll find out what's going on by Sunday morning. You'll be back from Monday's show.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows?
I'd really like that. Yeah.
Anything is possible.
In the meantime, there's something called the Raspberry Pi Linux Box. It's $25, and it's being put through its paces to see what kind of performance you can expect from this low-cost machine. So in a video demo, the PC was able to run H.264 encoded 1080p video smoothly and a slightly flickery version of XBMC. So if you're a home theater enthusiast, a home theater geek, take note.
I'm going to buy like 10 of these. The FBI is planning to build an application that will scrape information from social networks to create a system to warn of domestic and global threats. The warnings would then be overlaid onto a map to see where the threat applies. The app is currently in planning stages, and the FBI is just getting estimates from contractors right now.
Let's check what's on the randomizer.
Randomizer.
What's on the randomizer is Jim Henson. More and more of these old Jim Henson videos are showing up on the internet. AT&T actually put this one out. It's an old Bell video that was created in 1963 to teach members of the Bell business about computers and data communications.
This is awesome.
Is not treated with respect by mankind. Mankind does not appreciate the machine. Do not need you people. We can get along without man. We don't need man. Don't need man.
I think this explains a lot about what's wrong with the AT&T network.
They need
still running on that robot.
Maybe they need more robots. Or they need, you know what, there should be a Jim Henson. If they just had a Jim Henson video for the T-Mobile merger, the FCC would have been like laughing so hard, they would have been like, oh, that's brilliant, at least from the Jim Henson studio.
Yeah, that was one of the earliest Jim Henson efforts, actually. He did a lot of corporate videos in the 1960s.
There's that bizarre coffee video. Have you seen that?
Yeah, yeah. The coffee
gunshots.
Commercials where they shoot each other in the face.
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Well, I certainly would have liked to have learned a little bit more about computers through Jim Henson's mind. Pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. Patrick, do you like the Jim Henson?
We had a healthy debate on the Movielicious podcast with Nicole Spagnolo because he's the guy behind the Muppets, right?
Yes.
I'm not mistaken. Okay. She loves the Muppets and it doesn't really do it for me. And I got so much hate mail and hate Twitter and hate everything from my comments that I'm going to refrain from saying anything in this show.
Now,
it's very hard. The Muppet enthusiasts are very hard on people who don't get
right.
it.
No, it's true.
So Pat, you're in company. Leo Laporte, also not a Muppet fan.
There's
a lot of people in the audience that have this question on their mind. So just to get it out of the way, what's your position on Jerry Lewis?
I shall refrain from commenting on Jerry Lewis one way or another.
All right, well, then the controversy will just exist in people's minds. Let's move on to the calendar.
The Lenovo ThinkPad X130e is now available. There's actually two versions. One has AMD's E300 APU. It'll run you $429. And another has Intel's Core i3 2367M. That will run you $549. Estimated ship date for both models is February 9th.
Look, that something's incoming.
Incoming message.
It's a message from Texas. On it's a good analysis of Xbox possibly getting Blu-ray in the next version of the Xbox. Check it out.
AT&T crew, this is Patrick from Victoria, Texas. And while, yes, the PS3 does have 20-minute install times for most of their games, they also have shorter load times than most 360 games. In some cases, it goes from 10 seconds to, like, 2 or 3. Now, what's really nice about it, the 360 has Blu-ray feature, is the fact that Microsoft doesn't want most of their games to be multi-disc, because that makes it look bad when you compare it to the PS3. So games like GTA 5, just a whole bunch of stuff, they get limited because they only have 10 gigabytes to work with rather than 20 to 50 gigabytes to work with. But you're not going to want to have, 20, 30, 40, 50, 50 gigabyte installs. It's just not, especially with how much time it'll take to download all that, and also with the coming internet bandwidth caps for many countries, especially if it starts hitting America. That's my 50 cents. Peace out.
Finally, a caller who puts a proper valuation. No, I'm just kidding. No, good stuff, Patrick. Actually, that was worth more than 50 cents, I feel like. Good analysis of Blu-ray. I mean, a really good point that you can fit a lot more data on a Blu-ray disc than you can comfortably download.
I think Battlefield 3 was on 3 discs or something, and people were just like, why would you want to interrupt your gameplay? People were very curious about how the game was going to be split up. Was the multiplayer going to be on one disc? Was the single player going to be on another? And the move to Blu-ray just seems like another convenience aspect. It's like, look, they want the Xbox to be the one box, the one thing you have in your living room. They need to have Blu-ray for just movies, but the game aspect is brilliant.
On to the email, Andrew from Washington. Today on episode 423, you had an email that explained that there's no incentive for buying unsubsidized phones and switching to prepaid or month-to-month plans. Actually, Andrew, the emailer yesterday said that you didn't get a discount for bringing your own phone. It didn't matter about prepaid or not, but you still have a good point here. He says there are about 10 MVNOs on AT&T and 5 on T-Mobile that offer prepaid plans in the $30 to $70 range, which are huge discounts from two-year contracts. These plans regularly offer the exact same or very similar coverage maps as their more expensive counterparts, but at a fraction of the price and with no commitment. I personally do not have a contract with T-Mobile on an older, even more plus plan, ringing up around $70 a month. But as they phase these out and move to offer better value plans, I'm switching to a prepaid T-Mobile plus Walmart plan for my new Galaxy Nexus, $30 a month with no tax on refills. Now, he brings up a very specific point. The Galaxy Nexus works on T-Mobile, and you can on T-Mobile get it with a prepaid plan. But that is the exception, not the rule. I looked into this. Most of the prepaid plans do not allow you to use most of the smartphones. T-Mobile is one of the few that doesn't have restrictions on data. AT&T goes so far as to actually say you can't use a smartphone on their GoPhone prepaid plan. You have to get a smartphone plan.
And AT&T is supposed to be easier because you have a SIM card. You can just swap it on your... There are workarounds for iPhones in particular to try to get, like, I guess it's a data-only phone using the Go plans. And I mean, I like prepaid plans because I hate contracts in general when it comes to these things. And the funny thing is I was looking at some Android phones, but I have to do so much research to see if it'll run on any network. And if I want to get the non-LTE version, I'm stuck with that LTE, right? I'm only stuck to some limited amount of carriers here because we have GSM, we have CDMA, and then the LTE standard that we have here is so fragmented that you can't just swap a card and keep using a phone.
And if you use an iPhone or a Samsung Galaxy S2 unlocked on the T-Mobile network, you're stuck at 2G speeds. Because it doesn't have the proper radio to take advantage of their HSPA Plus on T-Mobile. So it's really difficult to be able to use prepaid and take advantage of that discount plan. And really what our emailer was saying yesterday is if you bring your own phone, you should get a further discount no matter what the plan.
I mean, the thing is...
You know, we...
Go ahead.
We used to have until maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, we used to have the exact same problem in France. We had three carriers, and that was it. And they would sort of find ways to make some plans kind of a little bit cheaper, but not really interesting for the people that they didn't want to take these to use these plans. And you know how we fixed it? Guess. Good old capitalistic competition.
Wait, I thought it was going to be socialism. You're right. Wow.
Exactly not. We did something that needed to be done. We allocated a fourth license for operating on the territory, and it was attributed to Free, which is which began as an ISP, which completely broke prices and allowed for internet service to become affordable for everyone. And they did the same thing in the carrier market. And now, basically, it was mind-blowing to see the reaction on the market. They announced a new plan. I'm going to simplify here, but basically, it's 20 euros, so about $26, everything unlimited. Everything. You have three gig cap on fair use data.
Which, by the way, most still, of the T-Mobile plans have a cap as well. Not the $70 one, but yeah.
Well, anyway, here the cap is usually around 1 or 2 gigs. So even that is higher. But everyone else aligned themselves with this. And this is a plan that you get without a phone, obviously. So it's not subsidized. But it means that you can use any phone and stick the SIM card in it, and you can use that plan. And everyone had to reduce their plans by sometimes, 40% in one day. And now the phone market, the carrier market, is basically fixed in France in 2 weeks.
When you say they issued a fourth license, was there extra spectrum that they gave, or is it handled differently in France?
I think there was I couldn't tell you. I think it's a little bit of, spectrum laying around that they attributed to that carrier.
See, we don't have any of that.
Well, I'm sure you could find some. You could find a way. You could
scrape up a little spectrum.
Well, LightSquared tried, right? They're like, we'll set up a network.
If we look behind the couch and under the cushions.
Honestly, it's surprising that it's a little bit exceptional, but we're the ones having the awesome competition and free market in this field when you guys are championing it. So, it's not always socialism.
By the way, Padre SJ in the chat room points out that the Samsung Galaxy S2 T989 does have the T-Mobile so-called 4G, their HSPA plus network antenna in it. But you have to buy that particular model. You can't just get any Galaxy S2. So thanks for that. He's going to be on the show next week while I'm gone. That's too bad. I'm going to miss him. But it'll be good to have him on the show. Last email, Sarah.
Last email from Steven in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, TNT crew. With news that Facebook is going to be rolling out the timeline to everybody, I thought you might be interested in knowing there's a way to change the audience of your posts and status updates for past posts, all of them, with just one click. So here's what the setting does. It changes everything to only being visible to friends, as opposed to friends of friends or public, etc. That way, once you do this, you then go back at your leisure through individual posts and manually change the audience to public, viewable to friends of friends, whatever you want. So here's what you do. Go to privacy settings, look for the setting labeled limit the audience for past posts. Click that link. Now you have a box that appears with the button labeled limit old posts. Click this. You are done. Pretty simple. Good tip, Stephen. That's definitely anybody who's like, I don't know if I'm comfortable with this timeline. I just don't know what's going to be there. This is a great way to just keep everybody out of your timeline until you have a chance to look through it. And then you can be selective about what you turn back on.
Awesome. Thanks, Stephen. Appreciate that. And that brings us to the end of the show. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening and for submitting your stories. If you haven't taken a look at our subreddit yet, my goodness, what are you doing? Go over there, technewstoday.reddit.com. Even if you don't submit stories for consideration, you can just see all the stories everybody else is submitting. It's fascinating to watch, and you get to have your voice heard by voting things up or down. If you're like, don't you dare talk about that story, I don't want to hear about it, you vote it down, technewstoday.reddit.com. That's our subreddit. Thanks to everybody who participates over there. Helps us figure out what to talk about each day. And Patrick Beja, thank you too for staying up late and joining us from France. Always good to get your perspective on the show.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure.
And that's the cue where you say the things about you do.
Right. Okay, yes, absolutely. If you want to hear me belittle Muppets on a podcast, you can go to themovalicious.com and you'll listen to that. It's very enjoyable. And I'm not Patrick on Twitter and everywhere else. So go follow me there too if you want.
When he says he's not Patrick on Twitter, he's not just taunting you like, I'm not Patrick. Yes. Guess what I am. His name is actually
N-O-T.
Not Patrick, N-O-T-P-A-T.
And now you will never forget it, listener. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. Or you can give us a call. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW, toll-free in Butler, Indiana. Don't forget, after you're done looking around in your car and under your couch for some extra spectrum to send the FCC, we got one more show for you tomorrow. Neelai Patel from The Verge joins us for that one. We'll see you then.